Hello, this is Sadie Scotch, the host of the Scotch with Sadie podcast. This is a podcast where we drink scotch and learn about business strategies. Let's meet my special guest now. Hello, Fiona Boyd, CEO of EdSmart, coming to us from Melbourne, Australia, I believe. Fiona, how are you today?
I'm really good, Sadie. Good to meet you and good to meet the people who are listening to your podcast. Yes, Melbourne, Australia, the little borough of Elsternwick. It's quite cold today. So we're heading into winter.
And I know we're definitely going to talk about the pandemic because we basically have to. It's, you know, for posterity's sake, if nothing else. But just briefly, what is Melbourne like right now? What are the rules? Are you allowed out? How does that look?
Yeah. All right. So the pandemic in Melbourne, where we're at, so the state of Victoria, we're just about to start easing out of level 3 lockdown. So there's been an initial easing. So people are allowed to go to restaurants and cafes. Not all have opened, but there's physical distancing in those environments. So obviously it becomes an economic equation for the providers. So some are opening, some are not. Doesn't make sense for some. Some schools are going back next week in other states, but our state, there are some schools going back next week. They would be special schools and a few others that are servicing. There's an arrangement for the children of emergency service workers, so they can attend school. But other than that, we're easing out of the lockdown situation, so it's not all systems go by a long shot here.
Great. Well, we're definitely going to talk about what the pandemic has meant for you business-wise. So, you know, it's great to get that snapshot into what your life is like kind of day-to-day. A lot of my podcast guests have been in different time zones as myself. You're the first international podcast guest, so I'm really excited about that. But the first subject of any Scotch with Sadie podcast is the topic of scotch. I am drinking a Gold Label Johnny Walker. It's a little bit of a throwback to my early 20s. This was the scotch that I really liked. I try to drink something different each time. And now I believe it is 9:30 a.m. in Melbourne. So tell us what you're drinking.
So I'm drinking what I drink all day long, which is a in a wine glass, natural sparkling mineral water with a slice of lemon. It keeps me hydrated. This is not the time of day to be drinking scotch.
If you were, I would have been very impressed, but also maybe concerned. So
I have no judgment against those who would like to have a 9:30 scotch, particularly in cold climates. And however, it is a work day, so I drink natural sparkling mineral water all day. Stay hydrated, keep brain working.
Excellent. Well, I am still going to ask you a few questions about scotch before we jump into the more important part of the conversation, which is going to be about you and your business and marketing activities. But, you know, to keep on theme, I have some very basic kind of pop quiz style questions for you around scotch. No, well, there are right answers. That's true.
But I probably won't get those right answers.
Okay, let's see. So the first one is, what is the main grain ingredient in Scottish malt whiskey? This is a multiple choice, so it's either wheat, barley, corn, or oats.
Barley.
You got that right. Yes. Okay. The second question is, what is the minimum alcoholic volume whiskey has to be labeled Scotch? So the minimum alcoholic volume, and it's either 100%, 37.5%, 40%, or 25%?
I would have said 40%.
You got that right. 2 for 2. The final one is the Gaelic term, and I'm probably not going to pronounce this right, for whiskey is usege betha. What does it mean in English? Is it either alcoholic in brew, water of life, wreck the house juice, or fire water?
Fire water.
The first X. It's actually, the correct answer is water of life.
Ah, great. Yeah.
We learn something every day. Okay, Fiona, we got that part out of the way. Very, very excited to speak to you today, not just because you're an international guest, my first female guest, which we'll also get into that a little bit, but because you work in the domain, the industry of ed tech. This is one of Responsify's specialties, really important during the pandemic. So just so pertinent to what's going on. Of course, you know, I want to start with you. I want to start with the company, kind of the basics. So if you could, for our viewers and our listeners, I suppose, walk us through a bit about your background. What led you to this industry? What led to you co-founding EdSmart? So a little bit about you, and then bring us up to speed with the company.
So in this, I'm more like Steve Jobs. I've done all sorts of different things, and I don't actually allow, I suppose, the people around me and the society around me to tell me where I need to go. So I left home pretty young at 17 and did 3 degrees, was self-supporting and did the things that I wanted to do. So at school, I was very much shoved into, the A stream and did higher maths, physics, chemistry, English and lit. I was really pretty proficient at all of those, but that made me more of a generalist than anything else. And I really just got sick of being told what to do. So in a sense, I kind of stepped out of the world and did it my way from my late teens. And just some of the things along the way. So I helped myself get through university by designing and making clothes and selling them at a market, which was fantastic. And it was in the days of punk and goth, and it was just a really awesome time. Look, you know, I think the things I've done, you know, I have a background in broadcasting with ABC Radio, which is the national broadcaster here in Australia, manage radio stations right around the country, including one that had a cyclone go through its patch, managed ABC Territory Radio in Alice Springs when the euthanasia legislation came down there, which was subsequently overturned by a change of government later. So, you know, and also launched a national youth station in Triple J, called Triple J in Cairns. So that's in far north Queensland. Look, at the time, people were in two minds as to whether to launch in Cairns or not, but there was such a hunger in the youth of the community and such a really latent, strong music and art community there. I absolutely lobbied that they got it. So that occurred. I had a background in broadcasting. I taught for a year. Teaching isn't really my thing. And back in the 90s, it was a very different environment. Certainly not an environment that I could see myself staying in, though I did have one great experience working with another graduate, or in fact, two other graduate teachers, where we combined our classrooms and we did a broadcast, a news broadcast about the school together. And as it was in an underprivileged community where none of these students were used to talking about their issues. They were more used to sort of struggling through them. In a sense, doing a news broadcast about their school, their day, their achievements, such an uprising of like good spirit and skills acquisition that came out of that exercise. So that's more of my view of things. It's not to lock people into boxes. It's to unleash their natural creativity and curiosity. Beyond that, I worked with ABC Radio around the country for a while after teaching. And then, we had a change of government, which meant that our national broadcaster had a lot of funds stripped from it. And I could see it becoming not a fun place to work. And it was the advent of the internet here. So I went, I don't want that old technology. I want this new stuff. And left and started first of all a management consultancy with my partner at the time, and then we started a really rather successful online community called Arts Hub. So that was jobs and news for the arts and creative industries. We grew that for 6 years and sold to private investors at around the 6 year mark. So that's still going. That is 20 years. Yeah, 20 years in October 25th this year. So still serving their communities, still growing. I'm really proud to be one of those internet entrepreneurs from, 2000 whose business is still there and still serving that community that it intended to serve. So did a few little ventures along the way after that using the funds that we're able to release, including, something that was didn't go anywhere, almost the opposite to Facebook, and it was before Facebook. It was an online social network called Folk Like Me. And it was really about trying to find ways to connect up people anywhere in the world who looked at world in a similar way. I think you grow up in a family and you're kind of assigned your role. And, for some of us, it's a lonely experience and we kind of yearn to find others that we can chew the fat with and create stuff with and make stuff with. So anyway, it's very sad that didn't go anywhere, but I wouldn't mind having another crack at that one. But with EdSmart, if we jump forward to there, that was formed out of a very visceral, real problem in the real world. And that was me taking paper forms out of my kids' school bags that needed attention, sometimes a signature, sometimes filling out a whole lot of information, usually the same information over and over, or sending something back to the school in my children's school bags. And over time I thought, I don't like doing this. It's bureaucratic, it's inefficient. I can't be sure the forms are getting back to school, and I know they're not with my son, because on days of excursion I get this mad panic phone call saying we don't have permission for him to go. Can you rush a form up to the school? None of that really, is conducive to happy life. And I remember saying to my partner, well, look, this to me seems like busy work for mums. It seems like schools are sort of like projecting more work out there for mums. And I actually don't want to do this. It's got to be a better way. And so he generated a prototype to digitise this process. We shopped it around to some schools we knew, schools of our kids, and got some feedback on it from the principal and educator perspective, because, there's plenty of technology that's developed from a technologist's point of view, but often the people who are going to be using it and impacted by it aren't really involved in the process. And the success of Arts Hub was that the CTO actually built that platform in tandem with the journalists, the users, and I think there's something about being the user and the developer working side by side. They're looking at things through a different lens. So anyway, EdSmart was then developed as a parent data capture management reporting tool. not necessarily a communications tool. Like, there's lots of those around now. Back in 2014, there wasn't so many, but we could see that there would be, and an app, you know, everyone was saying, let's make an app, let's do an app for school. But the principals we spoke to said, we're already getting inundated with apps. We don't want this via an app. We want this broad church. Can you integrate to different channels so that we can choose at school level which way we direct the parents to go and fill in their forms? So we took that on board, and that's pretty much, the total underpinning of what we do. We have to, we integrate with other systems, so data interoperability. And now we've progressed, because literally those early schools said to us, look, the way you solve that parent data capture piece, there's so much inside of school administration that works in a similar way. Can you do that? So we've built out the platform so that now you could call us a digital administration system for a school.
Okay, excellent. That was a great background introduction to yourself and bringing us up to speed about the problems that you were solving in the market, listening, what you had learned even from a previous company that helped you serve your audience. What I'm really curious to hear about, though, is, you know, once you had those early wins, you know, the product was being adopted by those original users really well, you were working with them. Tell me a bit about what the growth stage for EdSmart was like. How did you market the administration software across Australia? You know, what did you figure out worked best? Because it sounds like you had introduced something that was new to your market. So that's
It's new. It is new, and the thing with new things is you need to. It's a very different journey to. Bringing a product to market that is just an improvement on something someone already knows what its purpose is, then that is just trying to take market share away for us. We're adding a new thing to the education space, and we really needed people to understand how adding that new thing actually could make their school run better. As a whole, and it's even more complicated by the fact that EdSmart integrates with their other systems, so their student information system and their learning management system. So we're integrating to other systems, starting to get really complicated from a point of view of marketing. It was not an easy journey, Sadie. So half of this was us. We're a market maker. So Arts Hub was a market maker. We're making the market by doing things differently. So you could probably say half the marketing is around that. It's around convincing people that the way they've looked at running their school before is not the most optimal way for them and their school, and that things can be run better with something like EdSmart. And we, you know, our key sales points were things around you save time and money. We all know that teachers and administrators are some of the most overburdened workers in our society. There are numerous studies. There are some in the US as well, but certainly in Australia, UK, there are numerous studies that show a good chunk of teacher workload is around non-teaching activity. It's around compliance and paperwork. And that's the piece that we solve. We digitize that, we make it easy, we make it a click done sort of process. And we have process automation. So let's say an excursion. So end to end, a teacher might spend 3 months or 6 months on setting up that excursion and getting all of the approvals for it. With using EdSmart, the process can be set up. So literally all of those approvals and all can be captured within a 2-week timeframe. So it really speeds up the administration function of a school. And from my point of view, it stops teachers who are really, really, they're so important to society, doing donkey work. don't treat them with enough respect. The respect piece is the face-to-face. Face-to-face work and knowledge transfer and helping others learn is hard work. And what they don't need is all of these administrative layers sitting over the top of it. So that's the piece we want to do. We want to make their lives better, help them do face-to-face better by taking, the frustrating stuff out of their life.
Okay. Well, that makes me, brings me to my next question. Again, kind of introducing something that, you believe it has this value. It's going to save the time and the admin, and it helps the teacher. However, what I understand is that the decision maker that you're going to be selling to is ultimately the administrators, and the teachers who benefit from it are kind of at a different level. So I want to understand how you went about, pitching and convincing them that this was something that was a net value to schools. And also, maybe weaving this in, I definitely want to touch on, being a female entrepreneur. So yeah, going up against school administrators, what that taught you, and just being a pioneer as a female leader in tech. Maybe two separate topics here, but yeah, we'll start.
Okay. If I lose my way, just bring me back to the second part. The first part, and I didn't really complete your answer on marketing. The truth is, we just keep on trying different things, and we roll with a run up. So if a way we're talking to this, and I call it audience because I have a broadcaster background, if the way we're talking to this audience or community, is bringing us more sales, we keep doing more of that and refine it and tweak it and maintain the interest level. But when it starts to lose legs, we do something else, So if you were to say to me, do you have a coherent marketing strategy? Well, no, we're a startup and we shouldn't really. What is this? That's old big company talk. What we do is we figure stuff out and we use whatever we can find to help us with our messaging. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to meet that audience or that community. We're trying to find that space where them and us are in alignment around what it is we're trying to get them to sell. And for us, look, we're mission oriented. So if you're an EdSmart school, you're a school who actually believes that running all of your administrative function digitally is good for the planet, and is good for your school, and it's good for your school community. So you know what? Yes, you save time and money. And that's been a key thing. Business managers want to hear that. But you also, trees are not cut down because you use EdSmart. Carbon load is taken out of the atmosphere because of EdSmart. Parents like you better because you're not harassing them around paper forms coming home. It's an ecosystem of positive benefit, and I think that befits a mission. If you have a mission, your marketing is somewhat different to someone who's just going, we have a better widget. I think as a marketer, you could see that. Would that be true?
Yeah, I think, working in ed tech in general, and then, that's one kind of socially impactful industry, even though it runs the gamut, right? But in particular, I think with you as the leader with a mission-driven ethos, yes, that definitely does change the way people market their companies. I do also appreciate what you said about the flexibility of a startup. What was your marketing plan? Well, what was it on Tuesday? What was it on Wednesday? It's going to change all the time. So like you said, because I kind of combined two questions previously.
Okay. Yeah. So woman pioneer, I think I completely avoided that. Okay. So yeah, look, I'm an older woman, so I've done startups and I've blended family and business and life and all of that for all sorts of reasons, but mainly because I saw that fitting into corporate culture was a real crunch, and it crunches everybody's time. And the thing is about being human is you've got to have time to be human. We're not machines. Nowhere did I learn this more than when I was teaching, at 1 year teaching, where in this considered underprivileged community, just with this 4 week exercise on doing a group broadcast together and learning how to write news, and showing them the principles of cinematography for a news broadcast, and some of them doing makeup and styling, everybody had a role. And I could see the rise in self-esteem of those kids that normally, you know, were pretty defensive, pretty sad, really sad and depressed. So, you know, that has sat underneath my own underpinning. So I probably do things way differently. Don't do them in a kind of masculinist, you need to follow this, you need to jump that hurdle and then that hurdle and that hurdle. And by this time, we might acknowledge you. I learnt certainly in the ABC that if you want to play that game, the guys can change the rules on you at any time. So don't go for that. Make up your rules and apply them to them. So go the other way around. So I'm probably really quite different to the women you will meet who probably are trying to fit into the system. I'm kind of really not. And so we do have a good gender balance on our team. We're probably slightly more female than male in terms of numbers. We have a transgender person on our team. We have people from all over the world. So it's a tiny team, but the Australians on the team are only, I think there's only two of us Australian born. they come from Pakistan, from India, from Europe. and I love that. So as a woman, I just, you know, that's a great divide, isn't it? When you say as a woman, it's like this, you've accepted the other label. I probably look at more like this. If we need more leaders of all types, not just white men and the boys club. And now they've managed to be running the world for quite some time. And I think it's time that changed. So the only way it's really going to change is if people who aren't like them step up and do some interesting things. So that's my prism I view it through. Have I had some blowback and negativity? Hell yeah. Including, just as an example, and I think every woman listening would have experienced some version of this, which is we had a really rather lovely organisation, our well-run organisation, that was getting started just as EdSmart was getting started, and it was about bringing startup entrepreneurs and founders together to learn from each other and support each other. And I went to this event, the very first, and I had a young guy come up to me and say, "What are you doing here?" So, you know, wasn't made to feel welcome. He knew nothing about me. He didn't know that I'd done startups and got a successful exit. I think that's incredibly rude. I think it goes on a lot. That could stop.
Yeah. Well, I love that perspective. I think it's a hard question. It's what is the right answer? And I think, you know, hearing your opinion about it's a label, but it's a reality. Yeah, it's an evolution, I suppose. And I don't have a very good segue to my next question because I want to talk about COVID-19, this international pandemic. You know, there's no precedent for it in our lifetimes, of course. But tell us how has the pandemic affected business? What have you know? You're in a sector that has a lens on it again. What's going on? Tell us.
For us, Sadie, it's been really, really interesting. One really encouraging piece was that our schools, from pretty much beginning February, started to use us four times more than peak usage before. And it's because we figured this out that through talking to them, which is the channel that is EdSmart for notifications is quite a formal channel to parents. So it's about all sorts of compliance forms and the school requiring data, so medical data or phone number or whatever it is to enable something to occur. And that means parents are well used to getting an EdSmart notification and dealing with it. And it's very, it's believable, it's administrative, it's official in their minds. So we in Australia, we also have, I'm not sure if this is the same in the US, but we have a lot of international students who come from China, and our school year starts at the beginning of February, late January, beginning February. So many of our schools, and that includes, there's a level of students who go to some of the private independent schools for their year 11 and 12. So they're the senior years here. And that is, and with they're hosted by families. And anyway, there was really early warning for us by, late January when these students were coming back to the host families that COVID-19 was a thing. And our schools were really on it. So EdSmart schools, a bunch of principals literally were using our broadcast function to give a structured message to the school community every evening about what they knew about this situation. And just bear in mind, the first movers were those that had Chinese international students as part of their student body. So they were getting, and some of them had parents who were medical workers in China. So they had kind of advanced real warning, like real on the ground data to work with. And they were structuring messages to the school community about what they saw as an unfolding situation, what the school's position was, and what they asked of the parent body in terms of their cooperation and collaboration. I think it was really, it gave our schools like a real strong position to control the narrative to the school community. And I'll contrast that with, and I know from some Facebook postings of some other schools who don't have the platform and didn't have this channel, direct channel, and I guess, a voice of authority, really. The channel itself is agnostic, but Marshall McLuhan did say the medium is the message. And in this case, it really, showed to be true. EdSmart kind of was the official message. We had parents who were sort of going off in all sorts of direction, spreading misinformation and rumour, and really it created community confusion and panic. Whilst it didn't get right out of control here, there was a degree of community panic going on. Parents just taking their kids out of school before it was a government directive, and before even our health officials had a clear take on what this situation was. So for us, our schools used us in that unfolding scenario four times greater than peak usage. A bunch of our schools approached us to renew early because they were worried that if they went out on lockdown and their renewal came up, because they weren't necessarily set up for remote payment, that they weren't used to running their school and their payment systems and their usual providers remotely, they were worried that their renewal might lapse. So we had a lot of schools renew early for continuity of service. And we had some new schools sign, but pretty much new schools backed off. So for us, it's okay. We're doing all right, Sadie. We're not a learning management system, so we don't have a huge amount of interest yet. But I do believe once everyone's moving through this, when people start to do a post-mortem on how did you actually handle this and how did you keep the school community together, I think that will be our opportunity to show how EdSmart schools were able to shine with that. And just bear in mind, that is a lot of the load on the principal and the leadership team, just trying to corral the school community at a time where they're not really sure what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, there will be an interesting post-mortem, as you said, on a lot of companies, what's happened to entire industries, if entire industries continue to even exist, or new industries would be created. And I speak to a lot of different business leaders every day, and I think leadership is so important right now. I think you have some leaders who, you know, see this as an opportunity, not in a cowboy kind of way, let's double down, but just maybe to reinvest in yourselves. But then I see other companies who are just say, you know, oh, we're gonna freeze everything. We need to really evaluate this. Not saying that that's a bad strategy, but I think it comes from leadership, and it's just gonna be very interesting to do a postmortem on all that kind of stuff. So I just have two last questions, kind of getting back into some fun facts. You know, we started this conversation starting about Scotch. I spoke to one of your colleagues before this call, and she told me that you have some interests in life around meditation, traveling to India. And I think that's a pertinent subject because there is a lot of stress going on in the world right now. So fill us in on that, and also how, you know, you continue to practice that, and how, you know, again, during a pandemic time, that this enriches your life and your work.
So I do think we've become a very reactive society, and if anything, even a minor thing goes wrong, it's all panic stations, and you rush at it. And too action oriented. Now, I do believe it's good to take action, but you know, it's also good to take considered action that you can back and you're not, you know, ashamed of after it's occurred. So meditation is something that really enables me to tap into not just the surface level of what's going on, but what might be going on at a deeper level. And sometimes it's good not to react to things, to step back and watch what's going on. And meditation really allows that. I didn't actually travel to India for meditation. I traveled to India with my daughter, who has Down syndrome, to attend the Down Syndrome International get-together and conference symposium. And it was the most amazing experience. So I've got to say, I love the subcontinent. I've also been to Pakistan. Pakistan is, you know, I know the US doesn't love Pakistan, but they really should. It's such a great country. The people are divine. They're just the most hospitable people on the planet. And you know, they're really struggling with an education system that isn't delivering the results that the parents would want. And just as an example, you know, parents there will sell off ancestral lands to fund one of their children to get a Western style education. They believe so much in education that they'll put their own livelihood at risk. So, you know, I love the subcontinent. It's an amazing place. We've got so much to learn. The communities, you know, just the community stories, the culture. The West loves to report everything that goes wrong there. But when you're on the ground, there's so much going right as well. Look, equity is an issue, but just look at how China has got 70% of its population out of poverty through changing some ways they do things, through opening up a bit to the West, and not totally, a bit. I'm one to say you just don't go around telling other people how to do things. You got to work with people to find the common ground between you. Meditation, I think, is the sanity thing. You know, for me, I'd really like to stay sane where everyone else is losing their head. So I do meditate every morning from to five. And some days if I need more, if I'm not ready to get up and face and enter the day, I'll do another hour, I'll do 4 to 6. So just in terms of health and well-being, we identified early, and it's not yet finished because we're doing it as a team project, that to devise a health and well-being code to help us move through this time. So the EdSmart health and well-being code for our team, but also something that has legs beyond this COVID-19 situation, because we're human, you know, we're not machines, we're human. And we need to acknowledge that. You know, the words data-driven really annoy me. I prefer data-informed, because we're actually human beings, and you can have too much data and you can have the wrong data. So a lot of data-driven metrics, sometimes they're the wrong metric. Well, stop chasing this stuff. Think about the bigger picture before you rush around with your million metrics. As you can tell, I have frustration with these guys. You really just want to shove their data-driven process down your throat. How about data-informed? I think that's maybe a more holistic statement. And the other thing, I have had a staff member who struggled a bit, and it was the most beautiful opportunity to actually find out where they were at, interrupt some negative pattern thinking, and to actually sort of like explore with that person, you know, what does good look like for you? Let's design your day. And he's just blossomed and flourished. So sometimes you just got to catch that stuff before people spiral down and work with them to, you know, open them up, help them blossom.
Well, awesome. Thank you, Fiona. I feel like we could talk, or I would personally enjoy speaking with you for hours about all those things that you just said. I've never, as you could probably guess, I never got the opportunity to go to Pakistan. I spent months in India. I've even spent months in Australia as well. I hitchhiked up and down the East Coast.
Yeah. I love it.
Backpack, hitting the roads. But yeah, I've heard amazing things about Pakistan.
Yeah.
And I've met Pakistani people across the globe, like you said, so hospitable, so amazing. And everything you talked about, education and equity, I feel like, yes, a whole nother podcast. But wrapping up this conversation, just, you know, how can people learn more about EdSmart? How can they reach you? Yeah.
Look, I'm very approachable, so I am totally fine if they just directly contact me, and that would be Fiona@edsmart.com. We're very, very interested in, you know, helping schools run better wherever they are. So reach out if you want to and you have an idea, and, you know, you're committed to your school. You know, as you can tell, we're on a mission rather than we don't just want to sell your stuff. We want to align with how it is your school works and help your school to run better. I'm really keen to sort of like get on the ground in developing countries when we're sort of big enough to do that, because I think that's where we can make a huge, huge difference. So contact me direct or come to our website, have a little look around, but let us know what you want, and we'll connect with you and find out how we can do stuff together.
Excellent. Yes. Ending on a note of coming together, I think that's a great message as well for, you know, our transcontinental conversation with Scotch and with sparkling water. So thank you, Fiona. And I hope you have a good start to your day over here in the United States, wrapping up. And yeah,
Can I just add one more thing? We've just had a notification that we've won a global EdTech award, which I can't tell you because it's embargoed until the 24th of June. However, it's a global, it run out of a huge amount of nominations we're up against. Anyway, I've got to say there's some news on the horizon, and it's run by a US company. So, you know, there might be some interest from your part of the world and what we do sometime soon.
I'll keep my ears to the ground on that one. I'll update the transcript to this conversation so that, you know, if you're listening to this, just go to responsify.com, Scott with Sadie, and we will post what that award is. Congratulations in advance.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hope to speak with you soon. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Sadie.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been another edition of Scotch with Sadie, presented by Responsify. Thanks again to my special guests, where we learned about their story and, of course, a bit about Scotch. To find out about future episodes, you can visit responsify.com/scotchwithsadie. And to learn more about Responsify and how we help companies grow, you can visit responsify.com or email me directly at sadie@responsify.com or follow me on LinkedIn at Sadie Scotch. Until next time, cheers to growth.